Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Radio Free South Africa. Your host, Kalk van der Merwe, broadcasting from right smack in the middle of South Africa, Free State Province. Very cold midwinter year. You have summer, obviously, in the United States, in the Northern Hemisphere. Very cold on this side. Yes, losing a little bit of data feed here and there, so if things go wrong, I'm sure my guests will just simply move on, because both of them are very, very seasoned radio personalities. Mr. Frank George, my very good friend, Mr. Frank George, and then Mr. Tom Roten. Good evening, gentlemen, and how are you?
Doing great here in Huntington, West Virginia. Thank you.
And I'm doing great here. This is Frank George in Littlefield, Arizona.
That was Mr. Tom Roten from West Virginia. Guys, it's really such an honor to have seasoned people like yourself, very informed, very knowledgeable people like yourself on radio. Tom, you said you're on radio now for the past 19 years, nearly two decades that you've been on air. Frank, I don't know how long you've been. It must also be years upon years and years. Ourselves fighting the good fight, bringing the alternative news, not being controlled, not having to answer to people paying paychecks to big stations and so forth. So I think it's going to be a tremendous show tonight, and running through a whole lot of issues that we can cover. Let's start off, I think, with the most important thing, the blow-up in the United States. I spoke to one of my guests 2 weeks ago about the possibility of a new civil war in the United States coming, and we were predicting certain scenarios. And yes, something like that happening. We have Black Lives Matter and Antifa running in the streets, burning, taking over parts of Seattle and so forth. So those scenarios that seem far-fetched maybe just a year ago, those scenarios are actually coming to fruition now, or am I simply looking for something that's not really there? Frank, you go first.
You're 100% correct. A year ago, we would not have foreseen that this could happen. There was always the possibility of it, and it's most interesting that several weeks back, before Black Lives Matter came on the scene along with Antifa and started burning and looting, I was saying to myself, we're overdue for the blacks rioting and burning things down, because it's a cycle with that group of people. And, well, here we are. They did not disappoint, did they?
Well, clearly not. And just before we went on air, you mentioned something. You said that you actually attended one of these rallies. Can you give us a little bit more information about that?
Sure. I currently am what's called snowbirding. We get away from the harsh winter of Wyoming, and I come down to Littlefield, Arizona, in a little sliver that is between the state of Utah and the state of Nevada. Well, Nevada, Mesquite, Nevada, which has several casinos and such, the children there, the high schoolers, decided that they were going to have a Black Lives Matter protest because of George Floyd and the unfortunate incident where he died. But one must bear in mind that George Floyd was a career criminal, and that's all that there is to that. And with the help of some adults, they had their rally. It was peaceful. There was police presence everywhere, as there were patriotic American citizens all over the streets, keeping an eye, making sure that they did not get out of hand, that they did not destroy anything. And they did not. But while I was in the midst of the crowd, I saw this 6-foot-tall Caucasian fellow with tattoos all over him, skinny, with some kind of handkerchief covering his face, and he was on the phone, and he was saying, Whitey is definitely scared. Whitey is definitely scared. Now, 30 minutes later, he had a similar conversation with someone else on the phone because I was near him. So, you know what? The kids were used as puppets, and they were plainly stupid to participate in something like this. They would lay on their back for close to 9 minutes, simulating the amount of time that George Floyd was on his back, on his stomach, under the knee of the policeman. And they would say, at the prompting from a fellow who had his fist raised in the air, tall, brown fellow, he would say, "I can't breathe." And then they would all chant, "I can't breathe." Then he would say, "Mama, I can't breathe." And then they would all chant, "Mama, I can't breathe." And then, their little rally ended, and they went off being watched by everybody, making sure they did not damage anything. But it was surprising to see this happen in a predominantly Republican area, predominantly white. And in discussing it with others, it seems like it was an attempt to just poke their finger in our eyes. Nothing more than that. It is sad, Skulk, to see the youth of America so brainwashed that they would identify with a fellow who was nothing more than a crook, really. That's all he was. He was arrested for a home robbery invasion. He had put a gun to a woman's stomach, pregnant woman. And he did time in Texas, Dallas, Texas, I believe it was, 4 or 5 years. And then towards the end, he had all kinds of drugs in his system. A friend of mine refers to Floyd as Fentanyl Floyd because he had fentanyl in his system. So this was not a model person that anybody would be going out of their way to do these ridiculous things that were done. They were preposterous, absolutely preposterous. So that's what I got to see of that.
Now you see, that's extremely interesting. Frank, the protesters, were they white kids or black kids or mix of the two?
The majority were white with some blacks. Some of the blacks held signs that said, "We will never cease our struggle for equality." Like, they don't have equality. They have more than we have. If they complain about systemic racism, the government, and it does exist, but it is against white people. The blacks have been given everything. Some whites held a sign that said, "No lives matter until black lives matter." And you know, Skulk, I don't understand how someone can get so stupid, but this is where we have gone in our country.
Exactly, exactly. Tom, West Virginia, how are you experiencing what is going on now? Are there protests there too? What's the situation down in West Virginia?
Well, it's very interesting because Sunday evening, my family and I were at a local church service where the preacher said, "Even with all the trouble that we have in America right now, it's still the greatest country on earth. And we're very fortunate to be born in America." And then he said this: "We're very fortunate to be living in the region we live in." So Huntington, West Virginia, where the radio station I work at is located, is near the border of southeastern Ohio and eastern Kentucky. So in this tri-state area, we are not experiencing what you're seeing in Minneapolis, in Chicago, in Dallas, in Atlanta, New York City, L.A., Seattle. We don't see anything like that. Now, the closest that we have would be Columbus, Ohio. There's been some riots there, Cleveland, Ohio, a little bit in Cincinnati, Ohio, and a little bit in Louisville, Kentucky. But those are the closest, what you would call major cities to us. And the amount of riots in those cities has been rather mild and scaled back compared to, I'm sure, what Frank had seen and what we've seen on television and on social media. So we're very fortunate. We have had a few protests. They've been peaceful protests. One morning on the way to work, right after the George Floyd killing, I did see a Black Lives Matter banner hanging off a bridge above the interstate. But other than that, I've not personally witnessed anything. I do know that there's been a couple of protests in the area, in our capital city of Charleston, West Virginia, also in Huntington, where the mayor, who happens to be a Democrat, marched with the protesters. Other than that, there really hasn't been much in this area. I know there's some protests that are planned, but as far as I know, everything's been peaceful here.
But you guys, this is now very interesting, and it actually corroborates my own view of what's going on. Like COVID, once again, it's not that big. It's big, but it's not that big. But it has been blown totally out of the ballpark by the media. In South Africa, because what happens in the United States happens in South Africa, we like another state of the union. We've always been like that. And what happens on this side usually will happen on your side. And we also had our protests and our Black Lives Matter type of protest here. And yesterday, the very interesting thing that happened here, it was led by the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF. Frank, you will know these people very well. We spoke about them. It's hardline communist, Stalinist, communist, left-wing, black nationalist type of setup. The Black Panthers, not even that. They're even more ideologically to the left than for instance, the Black Panthers would be. Now, the EFF used to pull between 30 to 50,000 people if they rallied for whatever reason they wanted to rally. They had two rallies now because of the Floyd George incident. The one was in Sandton at the American consulate there, and the other was at the embassy in Pretoria proper. And at not one of the two did they draw more than 200 people, not even 1,000 people, not even 200 people, which tell me that the average Black South African, I mean, we've been bombarded through our media for the past week on this thing, but it seems to me that the African, the average Black African in South Africa is just simply not interested in this whole thing. Is it also the case in the United States that the average Black person in the United States, they can associate with this, but they are not really into this thing as much as the Soros and whoever, the bad guys, try to make us believe it to be? Frank, what's your opinion?
I think the majority of the Blacks in the United States went for this thing. They have for many, many years embraced the idea that they are downtrodden, that they are picked upon in this country, that this country owes them something. They're raised culturally to be that way. Not all of them. We have some good, wonderful conservative Blacks, but their voices are drowned out and they are too few. What we have are the ignorant who have chosen to embrace that this is a bad country and that this country owes them something. So there we are. And they're mostly Democrats, and they have that sliver of communism running through the whole thing.
Yes, Antifa, anti-fascist. Now, people are very, very easy to call Trump, for instance, a fascist. And everybody that you don't like is he's been called a Nazi and a fascist. But these guys running with Black Lives Matter, the white kids, I would presume, they call themselves anti-fascist and communist. I mean, they're openly socialist and communist. They run around with little T-shirts with a red star on it and the little hammer and sickle. So obviously there's a lot of ideology also around this whole thing of being leftist. It's very political. It's not just simply police brutality. A white policeman, doesn't matter if it's white or black, killing an unarmed person in the street. It was not about police brutality. It was a political agenda being played out. It's as simple as that. Tom, from your side?
You know, most of the black people I know are, I would say, disconnected from what is happening in the major cities. If they have feelings one way or the other about it, I'm not really seeing that. But I do know that with the younger black population in our area who have gone to college, probably still are in college, they have put some things on social media indicating that they are more identifying with the Black Lives Matter, that they are talking about racial injustice and that type of thing. But the older, more mature black population around here, I don't think has gone for that. In fact, Frank mentioned some black conservatives. I know a few. I've interviewed some. In fact, just not very long ago, interviewed Wayman Eddings, who's a black conservative in Kentucky running for the U.S. Congress there. And he's actually in Louisville. And so his city has experienced a certain amount of rioting over a separate issue from George Floyd. Actually, it was a no-knock warrant where a young black girl was killed by a SWAT team. Very unfortunate situation. But Wayman Eddings is talking about community organizing, much like Barack Obama did, but he's talking about it from a conservative perspective. And it's very interesting to hear him speak. And it's amazing how many black conservatives, and many of them are younger too, that are out there running for office in 2020. And I've talked to a few of them, and they have some great ideas, and they are condemning what they are seeing. And they do not believe in this narrative that is being pushed by the media and the Democrat Party.
Now, that's interesting. That's interesting because that was also what I was starting to read on this whole thing. But then it goes a step further. It seems to me as if the leftists, the Soros's of the world, I usually call them the bad guys. We don't have to say who we think they are. But I think that the bad guys, as with COVID-19, the bad guys overestimated what will come out of this. And I think there's going to be a blowback for them. The elections in the United States for the presidency later on this year, I think the big winner of this all is going to be Trump and not the Democrats. I mean, Biden, we can speak a lot about Biden, but I think Trump is really going to be the winner because of the misjudgment that these people had in COVID-19 and this whole thing of riots.
Well, I think it could be. They are trying everything they can, from Russia to Ukraine to COVID-19, the economy shut down, and now all of this with the rioting and so forth. Anything that they can throw at Donald Trump, and so far nothing has really sticked. So it'll be interesting. We have a short window for a lot of these things to get corrected. I'm talking about the economy specifically, because that's what Trump's strong point is. And if the economy continues to bounce back as it did in May, and we don't have another, as they say, second wave of COVID-19, and we're able to find some peace in our cities, I think Trump wins, and I think Trump wins big. But the more the burning of the cities continues, the more that police brutality can be exploited, and the longer the economy can be shut down, the better chance that a Joe Biden has at winning. And quite frankly, when people in West Virginia and most of Kentucky and most of Ohio look at Joe Biden, they see a loser of a candidate that they do not want to get behind.
Exactly. Frank, I know you've been critical, and rightly so, critical of President Trump. Is this also what you think can happen, or are we misreading the scenario?
I am very much concerned, and I, of course, will vote for President Trump. I think he's the best that we have, and he's the right guy at the right time, even though I have some dissatisfactions. But the Democrats are trying very hard to make it all mail-in voting. They're trying their hardest to sabotage the election any way they can. And I am fearful that even if in actuality President Trump wins, he will not be shown to be the winner because of the manipulations that are going to go into effect. Look, Skulk, as you mentioned, COVID-19, to me, this was a ruse. This was a scam. It was the beginning of an operation. And you see what it has done to the economy of the United States. Just south of me in Mesquite, Nevada, we have some beautiful casinos, which were always alive 24 hours a day and produced a great deal of revenue for themselves and for the city of Mesquite, Las Vegas, Nevada, which is an hour and a half away from me. Both got shut down until it pleased the Democrat governor to allow them to open in phases. And in these phases, what has happened is that the businesses have been crippled. They're not allowed to do business as they normally did. So they're bleeding money. They're losing money. And what we have learned here in the United States, at least in my case, is that even though we have a constitution, and I really love our constitution, we have First Amendment rights to assemble peaceably, and we have been denied that. There is no court that has stepped forward, except in very few locales where the courts have said, no, you cannot restrict your people that way. The majority of us, we are restricted. We're told to wear masks. It's ridiculous. This stuff is ridiculous. And now they're talking about a COVID-20 that may be coming around. They've already started the crooked media spinning that lie out there. So they may want to shut us down a second time. And by God, nobody should put up with it. You talk about rioting. There has got to be a civilized version of rioting to bring back things into their proper order, because we are not being protected from rioters and looters, which is a function of government. And if government doesn't do that, what is its worth? And I'm sure you're familiar with that, Skulk. And, of course, myself, being an older man who came from Cuba and knows what communism did to that country, it's right around the corner for this country. It really is.
But Frank, that's exactly right. Because what you experience in the United States, obviously, the people in Europe also experience this, the lockdown and the phases and all these things. It's a very internationalist and a globalist reaction. Now, we were told it's because of the World Health Organization, the WHO. Obviously, you were also told that nonsense, that story. Now the World Health Organization is speaking differently. They have a different version of events now. But the long and the short is, once again, it's a political agenda being driven behind this thing of COVID. Yes, maybe COVID is really a health crisis. Most probably it is. But it was certainly not that big. It was certainly not bigger than the other stuff we have to deal with in South Africa, HIV, the AIDS pandemic that we've had here for close on 30 years, tuberculosis, for instance. I mean, South Africa is still affected by that terrible disease to a huge extent. And we don't shut down economies for that. But COVID comes in, and we have about 2,000 deaths now, not even 2,000 deaths, where the patient was COVID-19 positive. It was definitely not COVID killing them in all 2,000 cases. But we've also shut down an economy, the strongest economy in Africa, for this. And we're hemorrhaging. We see small business just simply being wiped out. We've seen big business. Just to give you one example, we had a big retail chain here. It was called Edgar's. And in Edgar's, you could buy your clothing and your perfumes and all those things for 91 years. It's a business 91 years old. They've gone out of business. It's a terrible thing that came behind COVID, economically, but yes, of course, politically. There is the political side to this, and we see it in South Africa, how the ANC government, the ANC, SACP, South African Communist Party government here, utilizes COVID now, and they say it in so many words, to establish a new economy, the one that they want. It's basically their own communist version of what happened in the rest of Africa and Eastern Europe. They say it in so many words. That is what they are now establishing because of what happened behind COVID. So definitely there's this globalist agenda being played out very clearly in front of us because of this. And yes, I'm aware of COVID-20. I mean, they realized most probably that COVID-19 didn't create the chaos that they wanted, because out of chaos they can create order. And now they're coming up with the new COVID. And it's going to most probably be even worse, supposedly, than the COVID-19 thing. Tom?
Yes. In West Virginia, just to give you some perspective, we've only had 2,322 cases of COVID. And only 88 deaths in our whole state. So we've been very fortunate. Ohio obviously has had more. Kentucky has had a little bit more. But, of course, all three states shut down our economies. The favorite place that my family, and I have four sons, my wife and I like to take our four sons to a place called Orange Leaf. It's a froyo, frozen yogurt place. And it is shut down, never to open again because of COVID-19. There are chain restaurants in our area, Applebee's, Ruby Tuesdays, Golden Corral, that are never opening again. There are mom and pop family businesses that have been around for generations that are struggling, that may not be able to open back up, may not be able to continue because of the COVID-19 shutdown. And to think that we had to do the same thing here that they did in New York City, that they did in Chicago, in Detroit, Los Angeles, is so ludicrous. We have a state that is 1.8 million in population, and we are spread out over mountains and hollows and rivers and streams. We've been practicing social distancing here since 1863, when West Virginia broke away from Virginia. So we didn't need this. We could have used some common sense leadership, but instead our governor, Jim Justice, just followed suit, did what everybody else did, all the other dictators, except for a couple, South Dakota's governor being one of them. But everybody else was just an absolute dictator. And Jim Justice actually didn't even pay a price for that. There were about 8 other Republicans running against him in last week's primary election, and he received double the votes of all other Republican contenders combined. So him doing these daily COVID-19 press briefings actually helped his ratings, helped him in the polls, and obviously it paid off for him. So he wanted to keep this going, but it has really hurt the economy of West Virginia, which we struggle anyway. So it's sad that this has happened, and I, like you guys, I believe most of this has been totally overblown, and also I believe that it's been, at least here in West Virginia, mainly confined to nursing homes. In fact, most of the deaths were in nursing homes. The elderly and those who had a lot of other immune issues. And the only young person that died of COVID in West Virginia was a 25-year-old man. And from what I'm told, he was very obese. I mean, it's very sad that he had this, but he was extremely obese. And those who are morbidly obese, something's going to get them sooner or later anyway. And a virus like this that's not dealt with properly is going to get them. So again, I just feel like it has been overblown, and the cure, supposedly cure, has been way worse than the virus.
Yes, yes. Let's speak about cures, because now we told that vaccination is going to start to take place. And then we can go into all the so-called conspiracy theories of vaccination. If you don't vaccinate, then you can't even go outside. You can't even go into buildings. So obviously vaccination is going to be the key in future. I don't understand the whole play of President Trump around vaccinations. One day he's saying, yes, we will vaccinate. Next day he's saying, we won't vaccinate. Frank, what's going on? What is Trump's view on vaccination vis-a-vis COVID? Because it's not going to go away by itself. They want to vaccinate, and they want to use that as a means of control. What's going on in the White House at this point in time relating to that?
Well, I'll tell you, I actually do not know. Like yourself, I've heard he's for it, then he's against it. And I have discussed it with some of my acquaintances, and none of us will be taking their vaccination. In fact, I'll go one further. COVID-19, in my opinion, was something that was actually spread by whoever is conducting this campaign worldwide. They just released it here in the United States. I don't see it as being any different than the regular flu. And that's a conclusion that doctors have come to. It's a conclusion that many of us have come to. But I question the whole COVID-19 thing. I think that it was an act of subversion to actually release it here purposefully. And the reason I think that is because going back many, many years, I had acquaintances that worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, and they told me of having received orders to go out and spread bacteriological agents on city buses, for example, that were full of people coming home from work, and they used aerosol cans, and these cans actually contain the flu. And the guy told me that he took a whiff of it and got the most horrible flu in the world. So the question, would American government or an aspect of it actually do this to its own people and actually spread COVID-19? And my answer would be yes. It's in the realm of possibility. All of this was contrived just to gain control over the people. And I have no idea where the president stands on this. Forcing people to take a vaccination is something that, well, it's just outside of the American experience. You don't force people to do something like that, particularly with something of this sort. That would end his political career.
I agree with you, because the vaccination that's being touted now, that's supposedly going to be the magical cure, is not all traditional types of vaccination, which certain people already have problems with. We're speaking about the RNS DNA, which it literally, it's not me saying this, you can go and read these things in medical journals. It literally changes your gene code. I mean, it's a horrible thing to me to think that they're going to inject you with something and next day that your gene code is technically going to be a little bit different from the previous day. I mean, what else do they trigger? So it's a quite a scary thing to think about. But what's really troubling me is that Trump is not taking a very clear stance on this. And that's a big issue for me, because if Trump doesn't stop this, Trump doesn't take a view on this, how are we going to take a view and stop this the whole thing? Tom, what's your view of this?
Well, I talked to a doctor, Carla Dine Graves, and she is very insightful. She has actually advised the White House during this pandemic, and one of the things that she thinks is that there could actually be a way that it is connected, COVID-19, that is, to a vaccine, a flu vaccine. Now, I don't know that, but that's a very interesting theory that's out there right now. Dr. Graves also believes that hydroxychloroquine is something that's working with zinc, and she is questioning why Dr. Fauci, of the White House COVID team, is downplaying hydroxychloroquine. And, of course, the media has as well. But I have spoken with many doctors who see hydroxychloroquine and zinc and a Z-Pak as being something that's working very well with COVID-19 patients if you get to them early enough. And there's just so many other things out there that makes you question, what is the government's involvement in this? It's hard for a lot of Americans to believe that the government would do something intentionally to harm innocent Americans. That's hard for people to swallow. But there are so many questions out there that it just has to make you wonder at the very least. I mean, at least why on earth would we not use something that hundreds of doctors are saying is working with COVID-19 patients? That would make sense. And if it's working successfully, then it really means that this thing is not as bad. And when you consider the fact that many people probably had COVID-19 before we knew we had COVID-19. In fact, in Ohio, they found that there was a case back in January 7th of COVID-19. But nobody knew what it was back then. Many people in West Virginia have said they experienced the COVID-19 symptoms, myself included, back in January and February, but nobody knew anything about it. They weren't testing for it. So when you consider that fact, that so many more people actually had this virus, that takes the death rate down to such minuscule levels that it's hardly even worth talking about.
Yes. In South Africa, for instance, I mean, at this point in time, they've tested now more than 1 million people. Now, this is now the proper test, the thing where they put a little thing in up in your nose and they take a swab and all those things. So they've tested about 1.1 million people in South Africa. And from that, I mean, once again, we have very small numbers. The positive cases now is about 20,000 out of a population of 60 million. I live in an area that's mostly reliant on farms, on agriculture, but also on the mining industry, extremely reliant on the mining industry. And those mine workers, firstly, they were locked down in toto. And then the mines went to the government and said, rightly so, to the government, well, if you stop the mines in South Africa, you kill off the economy within 2 weeks, because we're still mostly reliant on mining in South Africa. So they started to open up this thing. And they screen test. This is not the whole test, the full test. They screen test every single mine worker. Every second day, when they go on shift, they are being screened. And nobody is testing positive. Now, this it doesn't make sense. Then you go to the Western Cape. It's where Cape Town, the American listener will know probably about Cape Town, that area. Extremely high incidence vis-a-vis the rest of the country of COVID-positive cases. Certain areas in the very rich areas in the northern parts of Johannesburg, many cases in the very rich areas of Pretoria, which makes me to believe that the people testing there, I don't know why they are being tested positive, but there's also something not totally it simply doesn't make sense. I mean, if the black population in South Africa living in these extremely high density areas in the black squatter camps, I mean, they live 8, 9, 10, 20 people in a little Mukuku house. If they do not get COVID or they don't test positive for COVID, then where did COVID gone in South Africa? We've not seen it. So nothing of this is making sense. And Tom, when you tell me this, then I have even more questions about what COVID is and where did it come from in the first place, and what's the purpose of this whole thing. And I hear what Frank is saying to me, and I also believe there's something much more sinister here. Not a conspiracy theory, there's something much more sinister that's going on. Either of the two gentlemen, Frank, maybe you can go first.
I wanted to add something that I heard just recently, that the Center for Disease Control, and I don't know if Tom heard the same thing, has said that hydroxychloroquine is not acceptable as a cure for this disease, that it has in fact cured many, many times. And this again is a move that I don't understand. Obviously, there are factions within government that are pushing in the direction of legitimizing this COVID-19 scam, because that's all it is to me. We have been conned. We have been taken advantage of. Our freedoms have been compromised. We have been kept as if we were laboratory rats or dogs or cats. We do not have the freedoms that we are guaranteed by virtue of our Constitution. And the people that are doing this to us are governors that we have elected into positions of authority, not the President of the United States. He has stayed out of it. And like Tom said, there was one governor that had enough common sense to let people decide what they were going to do, and that was in South Dakota. God bless her. It turns out to be a woman. And yet these other people, whether it be in California, Nevada, and even Arizona, Arizona has a Republican governor, they're not letting people go. They're keeping us locked down. You know, this is beyond what anybody can stand.
Yeah, without a doubt, Frank. And it's, I'll tell you what's criminal. When America watched the funeral, not just funeral, but the three funerals for George Floyd, and saw all the people that were there in attendance, it had to just break the hearts and infuriate at the same time the thousands of people who have lost loved ones during the COVID shutdown, either to COVID-19 itself or to a car wreck, a heart attack, cancer, or whatever caused the death of a loved one. Not only could they not be in the hospital to comfort their loved one, to say goodbye to their loved one, their mom, their dad, their spouse, their children. But then at the funeral home, they couldn't even have a proper funeral. That, my friend, is criminal. It is criminal. If I have a spouse, if you have a son or a daughter in the hospital going through some type of procedure that could possibly take his or her life, and you are not allowed to be there in the hospital, that is ridiculous. People ought to be arrested. If there's anything worth rioting over, and I'm not for violence, but if there's anything worth protesting over, it would be protesting the hospitals. Those hospitals need to be opened back up. You know, here in West Virginia, they laid off nurses and hospital staff by the droves when all this started because they couldn't make any money because they weren't doing their elective procedures. Some of those elective procedures would allow people to get back to work, back surgery, knee surgery, hip surgery, and so on. We weren't talking about, you know, plastic surgery or something like that, a nose job. We're talking about things that were needed for people to get back to work. And they weren't doing those. And so for the first time in my lifetime, hospital parking lots completely empty, floor after floor at our hospitals, ghost towns. I had pictures sent to me from people on the inside, healthcare workers on the inside. And they also told me this, that they were being overwhelmed because the staff wasn't there to take care of the patients that they did have. So now you've got healthcare workers working double shifts. They're tired, they're worn out, they're not able to do their jobs properly because the other healthcare workers aren't there. And then you have the situation where grandpa's in the hospital, he's not getting his pain meds on time, he's not getting his food on time, he's not getting his water on time. And you know why? Because nobody's there to remind the charge nurse to come in and do it. Nobody's there to hold the healthcare workers accountable. And believe me, from my mom, my dad, my wife's grandmother, my wife's dad, we've had to be in the hospital to make sure every time. And look, people forget, they get busy, I understand, but to make sure that our loved ones were getting the proper care in the hospital. And so we're not allowed there now. That should be punished by prison to keep people out and not seeing their loved ones. And that just burns me up. And then the fact that we've got elderly loved ones in the nursing home, and I understand this is largely a nursing home virus, but we still should have some way to visit grandma and grandpa in the nursing home, and we're not able to do that either. So these are some very frustrating things, and yet we can go to Walmart, we can go to the big box stores. In Kentucky, you could go to a drive-through liquor store, but you couldn't go to church. So these shutdowns are ridiculous, and what has been the most disappointing thing to me is not that tyrants would be tyrants. I expect that. It's that conservative, so-called conservative people in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, people who have listened to my program for nearly 20 years, and they have been compliant. That sickens me to death that they have gone along with this. They're going out wearing their mask. They're staying home. And that's fine if that's what they want to do, by the way. I refuse to wear a mask. But the fact that everybody has been compliant, That's very troublesome.
Tom, and I've written about this the last 2 weeks on my social media, on my Facebook, over and over again. In South Africa, we don't sit with a strong Republican right-wing type of a party. Our opposition are mostly also left-wingers and little liberal parties and so forth. But even the supposed opposition parties in South Africa, the DA now sprang to life because I think they realized they're going to lose even more votes coming the next election. But even our opposition parties did not do anything to stop the madness. They simply went ahead and they basically endorsed it. They went on television and endorsed it. Our so-called civil liberties organizations, some of them are quite right-wing, they even complied. Our churches complied. Our churches, some of the church councils in South Africa was prompting government to lock down. And I was sitting here in my study, and I couldn't believe what was going on. I was speaking to one of my dear journalist friends, and she was saying the same thing. She was saying, Skalk, I don't know what the hell is going on, because all these people are asking the government to take away all our rights that we've fought so hard for and lock us down. I don't understand what's going on. So, yes, my frustration is also your frustration. And I think, Frank, we have only a few minutes left, but I think you also share that frustration of good people not standing up to nonsense.
Absolutely. And factually, all our churches were shut down, but there was a pastor decided he would open in Mesquite, Nevada. So I attended the service, and I wear no mask. I refuse to wear a mask. This is all a scam as far as I'm concerned. And we waited for police to come in and arrest us, but that did not happen. A glaring controversy in this whole COVID-19 thing is that if it is so deadly, why did the government not send thousands of troops to secure the southern border? Because it remained completely open with people coming in, bearing all kinds of diseases and ill will towards this country, but it was kept completely open. So who exactly are they trying to protect? They protect nothing. We have witnessed a wholesale failure of the political establishment in its entirety, where you have a tyrant governor, you should have a legislature of the state that would overturn his evil actions. That didn't happen. We are on our own and possibly on the way to a civil war.
I agree fully with you. And once again, what happens in the United States is happening in South Africa. We can see the lines of battle already being drawn here. Very early on in this thing, we saw the South African Defense Force being deployed not in the black areas where people were running rampant and not locking down. That being so-called illegal in South Africa, they were deployed into the white areas, as if we are going now to mutin and run in the streets and riot and whatever. That was what was happening. So yes, the lines of battle has clearly been drawn. I mean, South Africa, we know we are the enemy of the state now. We hear it day in and day out from the politicians. And now we even have the armies, the army being deployed into white areas. It's very clear what's going to happen on this side. And I suppose it's going to happen on your side also, not maybe as much on a racial basis, but also Republican versus Democrat, right-wing versus left-wing. Those things are going to come to fruition. Maybe not this year, but it will at some point in time in future, it will happen. It's as simple as that. We have about 3-4 minutes left. Tom, where can people find you? Where can they listen to you? You're an extremely knowledgeable person, and I want my listeners and my followers also to listen to you. Where can they find you?
Well, thank you. I'm at News Radio 800 WVHU, and online that's 800WVHU.com. And I'm the only local host on the station. We carry Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity during the day. And it is an iHeart station, so my show is available on the iHeart Radio app. So if you have that app, you can put in my name, Tom Roten, that's R-O-T-E-N, or W-V-H-U, and you can listen live. You can also listen to my podcast there. I upload podcasts daily. And you can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter, at Tom Roten.
Tom Roten, Thomas, as you would always write it, and then Roten is R-O-T-E-N, Tom Roten. Frank, a few words from you, and then also where can my people find you? How can we delve into your great knowledge and your seasoned opinions?
Well, I have not done much. I have withdrawn from doing podcasting and such because I think I've just about said everything that I've got to say. Maybe in the future I'll do a few short videos, and I can be found on Facebook. Frank, and the last name is spelled J-O-R-G-E. F-R-A-N-K is the first name. The last name is J-O-R-G-E. You can find me on Facebook. I think this year is going to be definitive for our country here, the United States of America, a country that I have grown to love as an immigrant who came here at 7 years of age and watched Cuba turn completely communist. And now the question is, will I be forced to watch the United States also become a communist nation. And you know what? If it comes to that, I am willing to fight. I don't care what happens. I'm not going to go down without fighting, and I mean it.
I love that. I love that when you say that, because in South Africa, we're facing exactly that. We're also facing, in real terms, what can happen if a leftist slash communist government, even supported by Cuba and supporting Cuba, we can speak about that on another show. What happens if people like that is running your country? Tom, the West Virginians, what are they going to do in future? Are they simply going to lie down? Are they going to fight back? What's the feeling on the ground on your side?
Well, unfortunately, this seems to be the apathy capital of the world. People just comply here for the most part. But I think that the line that will not be allowed to cross will be guns. People in West Virginia and Kentucky and even in Ohio are proud Second Amendment supporters. We are gun carrying people. I was just at a Men on the Mountain retreat over the weekend with my sons, and it was in southeastern Kentucky. And there were about 250 men listening to preaching under a tent, and there was no social distancing, no mask. White men, black men, a black man actually became a Christian at this meeting. It was wonderful. And many of them were carrying guns on their side. And I said to one man, I said, do you think that Kentucky's governor, Andy Beshear, will send in his troops to stop this? And the gentleman looked at me and he said, I'm a deputy sheriff. There's several Kentucky state troopers that are here, part of this. I don't think it's going to happen here.
Thank you so much, Frank. We're signing off, ladies, in South Africa. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Thank you.